Good evening. It's 7 o'clock. It's Wednesday evening, and this is Work of Groups. This is our eighth week in delving into the Secret Talks Volume 5 by E.J. Gold called Work of Groups. And it's a volume that hasn't been made public, in a sense. It hasn't been I was responding to hand signals. Her book. it's a demonstration of how the group was actively working with EJ in a very, very active manner many years ago. And as we unfold it, part of our task in this evening is to delineate what are some factors that we see are that constitute factors called, this is what constitutes a group.
And just to amplify what you have said, this book is also a record of a group working mm-hmm. intensively with EJ. So it's a reciprocal thing. He was working with them, and they were working with him in the material, and it was, you know, raised up to a higher plane, so to speak.
And the difference is that 30, 40 years later, whenever it was being active, the technologies have changed, and we have individuals now who are joining us physically here. But there are a lot of people that are joining us online in other venues. They're on the East Coast of the U.S. Some people are in South America. I don't know if Bernie's on. I'm going to wind up getting you a book, by the way, Bernie. And then, and bottom line of it is that how do we form a group in today's technology? How do we work today when some people who are very active, very alive, also happen to live in Toronto, Canada, or nearby.
And I have one of the secrets.
That has a secret.
Yeah, which I will be willing to share for a small piece of the Manhattan Bridge.
So,
the one that's in Arizona.
So one of the things that we've been doing, at the beginning of the class, we've been reading the elements that came up in the previous class as elements as such. We are employing a scribe, and the scribe's job is to notate those elements that we say, this is an element of kabootness. Okay? So, Pat, this is from week 7 on your right.
Thank you.
All right, and can you read that for us, please?
Wednesday 5, 3:17, week number 7, 1. Functions of a group. 1. Allows you to be in a position that you can't be energetically and alchemically on your own. 2. Provides the pressure for the sacred act of humiliation. This process and resulting effects was demonstrated by putting the group on notice to respond to a question. 3. Through participation in a group, the group can provide a group meal, so to speak. 4. A working group is as a fine fabric being woven. And 5. There's a reciprocal nature to working in a group. It can be used to set ourselves aside.
Nice.
It does bring back our meetings.
Yeah, it brings back our meetings.
So nicely.
What was the third one again?
Through participation in a group, the group can provide a group meal, so to speak.
So part of what we, the efforts, the interesting efforts that happen are, can create the beginning of a fabric of an alchemical fire between and amongst us. And that's a particular type of food that we can avail ourselves of.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So we're going to continue now. Does anybody remember where we left off last time? Nobody remembers.
I do, but I'd have to open my book.
Oh, come
it.
On. We don't watch
just,
it.
I just wondered, are we going to mention this?
I can't.
You can't read it.
Yeah.
It's too
so
far away.
Can you read it?
Yes, I'd be happy to read it. Assignment.
Oh, my gosh. So we did have an assignment.
Yes. Think of something non-ordinary and bring it to the group.
Well, before we get into the assignment,
okay.
Thank you for that, Pat, but that's, I'm glad you brought that up. But before we get into the assignment, we're going to proceed with Chapter 20. And Ivan, I think let's just read, it'll orient us, let's read the first page and a half of it.
I keep trying to find the place he stops.
I'm just going to say, let's just start. We'll just start with
20.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You should get your book out.
I have it. It's happy.
Go ahead, Ivan.
Chapter 20, More Words of Warning. G, as we sit here and talk, do you understand that sitting and talking will accomplish absolutely nothing? In the same way, jumping up and down or nodding in prayer will also do nothing in a real way.
Keep going.
Action and talk are equally valueless. Nothing we know how to do in the ordinary way is going to help. Instructions for becoming a candidate for work are couched in such a way that only through extraordinary efforts is it possible to unlock work secrets.
Go ahead, Pat.
When we think of extraordinary efforts, maybe we only think of ordinary things, but in a peculiar way. For example, we have read somewhere that someone has been sitting atop a flagpole or crawled 200 miles on his belly, and we somehow think these are not ordinary efforts. Perhaps we think of extraordinary as doing on a bigger scale than we have done before. Maybe we think of extraordinary efforts as things to which we are not accustomed, yet these things are still ordinary. Nothing that we know about without special data and special help will be of any real work benefit. Just by itself, to talk is no good. To pray in the ordinary way, that is, for one's own welfare, also no good. Exercise is no good. Think of something not ordinary and tell the group about it.
Can you read that last sentence again, please?
Think of something not ordinary and tell the group about it.
Dan, can you type that sentence into the log, please? Okay, so we're going to do that exercise, okay? But we're going to do it, because we have some other ground that we have to cover. In about 30 minutes, we're going to do that exercise, okay? And Dan and has composed a list of everybody that's here and everybody that's online, and we'll go through and ask for data from everybody so we can get some ideas of what it is. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So what is it again, Dan? What's the exercise?
Think of something not ordinary and tell the group about it.
Okay, so it sounds like the exercise has something to do that I need to think about something and then tell the group is the other part of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right, just getting it clear in my
mm-hmm.
mind. And Dan, you'll let us know about, let's just say 23 minutes from now, okay? Let's just say 23 minutes from now, give us a high sign and we'll start the process. Okay? Fair enough? All right, thank you. So let's continue. So now, here we are in this, just think of this situation, probably 2 a.m. in the middle of the night or something. They've just finished another round of tea, and EJ says, okay, tell me something. What did the group say? Go ahead.
B, there have been moments in which due to extraordinary efforts, I know I have transcended my normal state.
This is the mistake O made. He assumed that because he had transcended his normal state, he had achieved something that was genuine. He happened to activate a center not ordinarily used in him, but efforts he used to achieve this again more permanently were of no value.
Go ahead. Were they not valuable in the sense that at least they gave him a picture of something to aim for?
Not what we are trying to do. Subjectively, very impressive. They may keep us working for a long time, but are of no value in real work. Go ahead.
And when you talk about health, what kind of health are you talking about?
Not ordinary health. If we could recognize efforts which are...
No. If we cannot.
If we cannot recognize efforts which are not ordinary, it is obviously impossible to recognize health, which is not ordinary. How do you like that?
I love it.
Go ahead.
B, what is the best thing to do if we are living in an ordinary state and cannot recognize something which is not ordinary?
G, nothing you know how to do now will help you.
M, even the act of sacrificing?
And Ivan, here we get to your comment.
Yep.
G, even sacrifice, when performed without special help, becomes ordinary manifestation.
B, doing something for which we have no motivation?
G, this is very good. An effort for which we have invisible motive is not free of motive. You think of things to do, but real doing is not ordinary activity. In your most ecstatic states, you cannot even imagine real work efforts. They are not to be found in religion, written esoterica, even most oral traditions. Many other seemingly special efforts can be seen to be ordinary when we see the difference.
E, that makes sense to me, but it does not help me.
G, it cannot help you. You can make no active use of mentation. Your false eye is passive, simply receiving data and associating it with other data. Unless real eye somehow activates mentation, the machine will remain in this state. false man has available to him only, very important, only that data which belongs in nature, even in trying to discover something which is not ordinary, we are more or less forced to use ordinary means. I can safely say that you have never made a non-ordinary effort, as extraordinary as you think your effort might be.
Or, by active mentation, do you mean the use of the intellectual center?
Gee, the intellectual center does not know how to think, no matter how much effort and force we apply to it. It is just another machine which does nothing useful.
Or, so does the same apply as far as the other centers not being able to do anything with them?
Gee, during the formation of the emotional center, one becomes derailed by demands of mechanical civilization, experiences, impressions, and data for forming real centers are distributed willy-nilly to parts of centers which happen to be active at the moment. So the false centers are formed, their data provided solely by external conditioning. If we could think, we might at least examine the situation. We could probably arrive at what extraordinary efforts are not by reviewing all efforts we have made, and by the process of elimination, we see that there are some ideas outside the realm of ordinary knowledge. Only then could we begin to work in a real way. Through apprenticeship, this can be achieved. Do you want to unpack that a little bit, anybody? That particular couple of paragraphs.
A leaf to the core with this one? How about
Harry, Dave, Silverdale, Paula?
You know, I'll tell you for myself, I frequently begin with EJ's premise in the human biological machine as a transformational apparatus. He says that within us is an essential self submerged by the dominant electrical field of our physical body. So ever since I first read that idea 25 years ago, for me, my efforts have been directed on verifying experimentally and experientially the veracity of that possibility. And so for me, that would be an extraordinary effort that was not ordinary at all. That is separating those two electrical fields and comparing one with the other.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree with you. That would be, I think that would classify as an extraordinary effort because you would not be simply in response to the electrical field of the machine.
And there's a cautionary flag at the beginning of those two paragraphs where he says that even when you're working on the formation of real centers, you become derailed of the mechanicality. These are self-observation points that we must just continue to look at. Okay?
I think it's a challenge to move from the beginning of this paragraph, which implies that it's quite likely that we don't think, because it starts off, if we could think, we might at least examine the situation. So we start from there, and we end with the paragraph saying, through apprenticeship this can be achieved. I mean, come on, what is that, four sentences? like 40 years worth, you know? That's really what that is expressing. It's expressing the actual potential possibility and means by where it can be achieved that real work can take place. I'm dumbstruck. So I want somebody else to talk about it.
Okay, well, the only thing I feel like I can address here is this idea of apprenticeship, which is, to me, this is meaningful in the sense that I'm an instructor. I'm teaching at a community college, and, you know, I teach in a classroom and so on. And just about everything that I do in regard to education, teaching, passing on skills or whatever, which happen to be writing skills in my case, are not apprenticeship. And, you know, it means something very specific, and it is out there somewhere in our current educational system, but it's not very prominent, and it's not very favored, it's not, you know, it's not very promoted.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, what in this context, what EJ is speaking of it, if what it suggests to me is that, just like the what he opened this talk with, as we sit here and talk, do you understand that sitting and talking will accomplish absolutely nothing? Yeah, the idea is that to activate anything in the realm of this obligation to the work, conscience, real mentation, all of the, any of these things that he keeps referring to as out of our reach, as beyond mechanical life, I think that he's suggesting that this is only going to take place in an on-the-job training situation, which is what I understand apprenticeship to be, which is to say, so you have a master or a instructor, you have a somebody that you're going to emulate. In apprenticeship, you imitate the processes, or you develop skills
mm-hmm.
by being thrown onto the job where there are other people who have those skills. And again, I think it's another way that EJ's suggesting that you have to get in motion to reap the benefits, or to have the qualities descend on you, you know, to have the essence qualities. I don't think he's not necessarily saying that you cannot cultivate the essential self in ordinary life, but I think that he's saying that the obligation, the nature of the work that he's doing is all, he keeps using the word special and unusual and extraordinary. And so you have to get out of the stream. You have to do something to step out of your ordinary stream and be involved in an activity or a process that's going to bring about some of these, bring these qualities to you, or the, I'm trying to think of what they are, the skills even that you need to
mm-hmm.
come with the job.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to underline something that Ivan hinted at on page 47, at toward the bottom of that page. G says, do not worry. Conscience comes with obligation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yes.
So you had mentioned conscience for a moment there.
Yes.
And I just wanted to underline, well, how do you form conscience? Well, somehow there's a possibility of taking on obligation. And
back up to the top of 44. I'm sorry, I might have
regarding the apprenticeship.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes?
Okay.
And this apprenticeship, is it something one has to specifically ask for?
Apprenticeship becomes possible only under certain exact conditions. Ordinary conditions do not offer possibilities in which extraordinary efforts can be made, not just working like an ox.
Or where on the scale are super efforts made?
Gee, scale of super efforts makes no difference.
Or do extraordinary efforts grow out of the application of real conscience?
Gee, real conscience develops as a result of extraordinary efforts. It depends as it should have developed. It develops as it should have developed, had centers formed in essence, had personality never formed, and had obligation formed. Now, we must transfer everything from personality to essence. Essence must absorb fully, after which we can hope to be in essence age, maybe 15 years, maybe 20. From ordinary essence age of 2 or 3 years, this is a very big thing. Demands of civilization inevitably claim a child by the age of 5 unless some extraordinary shock occurs to prevent the crystallization of personality.
Is that desirable?
Gee, something similar to personality must form in order for an individual to function. However, it need not form personality. The same impressions are usable to the essence for the development of its own natural centers. The artificial introduction of shocks constitute what is lacking in mechanical culture. If our contemporary civilization were not mechanical, it would occur naturally. What do you think he means here by shocks? What's an example of a shock? The death of someone? Good example. Or an actual physical electrical shock. Is a shock, that's true.
Or the interruption of a flow either of energy or of nutrition or of sight or of any sense organ, any interruption of the, quote, normally operating mechanism would be a shock.
So it doesn't have to be a giant, boisterous blast, but if anything that derails the mechanicality of its natural flow becomes a shock. If we allow ourselves to be so influenced, sometimes it takes a little extra for that to occur.
Usually.
And we have an advantage in that we occasionally get to meet as a group, and therefore, by almost by definition now, we're noticing that it is providing us with a shock.
Well, that's the most magnificent part of groupness, in my opinion, is by definition, it carries within it the potential for group mind, group effort, and group conscience to develop. Which it cannot outside of group actually go there. But now, can I give my example?
Yeah. I don't know.
No, not of the exercise.
Group mind, group something, and group function.
Group mind, group effort, and group conscience. No, well, it's not an example of the exercise. So, I sing with a choir 2 nights a week. I've heard for years about various things to do while you're singing, you know, listen and tune and all these things. And recently, what has become more stated more frequently and more obvious when it actually occurs is there's this process that can be called singing as one. Now, even if you're singing different notes or even potentially different words, if you sing into the group sound, it's different than if you don't. And this is intriguing to me, very intriguing, because my ear is very trained, and I can hear the difference. And so I started spending more of my time when I was singing directing my sound, not in all of the other ways that I've learned over the 67 years of singing, but only in that way. And guess what happened? The development of the sound improved all by itself. Cracks me up.
But there was a natural, the group sound was acting as a mirror of excellence
as
well.
Absolutely. It's just, it really cracked me up.
So if we can allow ourselves to be in, notice the excellence of the tonality of this group, you come out of the somnambulance of your everyday existence.
Yes, just this part.
And just me.
Yeah.
And suddenly you're available. Go ahead, Dan.
Art of NGF says, modern death rituals usually buffer the shock of death so it doesn't penetrate.
Thank you.
A shock can be something as simple as being made to notice that a mental block was all that was keeping one from deciding to draw, for example.
Good. That's a very good example.
I was, well, we're not on the example part yet,
yeah.
I guess. Dan, right? We have a couple minutes to get ready for telling our, the exercise, right? Something like that. 2 minutes? Okay, where are we? Shocks.
Shocks. Oh, shocks?
What a shock.
Go for it.
Okay, where are we?
Yeah, we're at shocks.
Oh, okay, shocks. Shocks. Gee, shocks, yes, a series of shocks. At 5 years of age comes what can be called the divergence. This occurs at a tangent to the ordinary direction of the development.
No, not ordinary. That's original.
The original direction of the development of the essence. Then again, another tangent occurs at the development of the intellectual center. This thinking center cannot develop if the false emotional center has already developed. Everything depends on everything else.
Or it diverts impressions?
Gee, it diverts impressions, yes.
So is the help you are talking about transferring impressions to the real centers?
Gee, no. Even this effort is ordinary.
S, would it be not ordinary to stop attempting to do that?
Gee, of course ordinary. You would stop before arousal of initiative. Your work now should consist of impersonal initiative. You are too altruistic towards pitiable causes to be good for the work.
Monsieur, it seems to me that in order to ask a real question, one would have to know what he or she wants from the school. Another way of saying that is, in order to get something from you, the person would have to have some idea of what they are seeking. When I came into the school, I felt I needed to pay back a debt because you helped me. Now it has become for me like an obligation. I feel a sense of obligation being here, being near the work. My question has to do with the importance of knowing why I am here, the importance of asking questions, trying to get something from you.
We'll get the answer to that after, because Dan just notified us that it's time, right?
It's time.
So you go ahead and call out who you decide, and after everybody has made
a contribution,
then you put a check mark near their name, okay? How many people are on your list there, roughly? Okay, good. Go ahead. Well, you just decide who's first. And except, let's have Silverdale and myself will go last, okay? Then I can kind of just see, copy other people's answers and stuff. These are good.
Okay, so we'll start with, how about Eric Brummel?
Okay, Eric, can you, what was the exercise again, Dan? Can you please speak, let the group? Page 2 of this chapter.
Think of something not ordinary and tell the group about it.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead, Eric. You can just type it into the log. I mean, we have to assume that there's a lag.
Of course, we can assume that.
But for Eric, it's first.
Eric says, being in two places at once.
Okay. Next, Dan.
Dara.
Dara. Some people can't call in because of weather and stuff, so. Go ahead, Dan.
The answer hasn't appeared yet.
Come back.
Oh, okay. All right. Go ahead for the next one then.
Okay. Art of NGS.
So, Art of NGS. You're up. I don't remember the exercise anymore.
You have to pay attention.
You have to pay attention.
You have to concentrate and you have to focus.
Okay, well, I'm too nervous.
Yes, and
okay.
We do have a big lag.
Yeah, huge lag.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Vadera says, doing the impossible.
Very good. Very good. I'll try to copy that one. Go ahead.
Art of NGF says, existence has no observer.
Okay.
And Yapal says,
who?
Gopal has jumped his place in line because they didn't call on him.
Oh, okay. Give him a break.
Give him a break. Okay.
And he says, not ordinary is a nun juggling colorful balls in front of the post office.
Oh, thank you.
I just saw that today, by the way. Okay, who's next, Dan?
Bernie LaPlante.
Oh, good.
Hi, Bernie.
Bernie. Okay. Go ahead, Bernie. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to put in my two cents.
Oh, he's calling on himself.
Which is, what came to mind was creating a piece of objective art. And specifically, I was thinking of whenever EJ is extemporaneously creating music.
Okay.
There's five more of us in the room.
Well, how about Paula?
Hi, invoking the presence of our presence into the present.
Perfect.
Done.
Marvette, are you up to this?
Intoning the phrase I am and sensing the reverberation of it within yourself.
Okay.
Patricia?
I'm going to jump off track. I'm going to describe the example of the non-ordinary as I experienced it, and then we can have everybody judge it for themselves.
Okay.
I'm sitting in my mother's house. I am not responding. I have gone into a semi-comatose state, although I am awake. And I maintain that deliberately. I don't have a reason for it. I'm not questioning that. I just maintain it. She comes in the room and sits down and speaks to me, and I do not respond. At a moment, I wake up. Hey, what are you doing here? Came out of my mouth.
Thank you.
I guess I'll move on to another person online, Muscle Spark.
Okay. Go ahead. I don't know what the lag is.
Yeah. Long.
It's usually about 30 seconds late. It's been all right, how about Ivan? I'm thinking of recalling an entire lifetime as a dolphin in the ocean.
Oh. You took that one, did you?
That's what I can do right now.
Okay.
Can you recall it all?
Muscle Spark says he's typing his answer.
Thank you.
So I'll go on to Puka Puka.
Puka.
While we're waiting, I guess I should ask David for his answer.
No, I'm going to go second to last.
Okay.
About most of the answers, but
okay.
Real answers. Go ahead. So, everybody hears that. Janet.
We have another answer out of turn.
Oh, yep.
Molly Midway says.
Molly Midway.
Says,
yay.
Doorways.
Okay. Doorway exercise. Can you repeat the exercise again? We just had another guest has just joined us. And the exercise.
Okay.
Well, chapter 20 of Work of Groups, and the exercise is.
Think of something not ordinary and tell the group about it. And Puka Puka says, ordinary machine thinking is all I can do.
Okay.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Okay.
And we've all had 35, almost 40 minutes to think about this, but you're going to be put on the spot.
Oh, no.
Think of something not ordinary and tell the group about it. Okay,
She's sitting there taking notes for the better, trying to get the best answers.
Oh, someone else responded.
Who else you got on the list there?
Well, we called on Bernie and Muspel, and Muspel is composing his answer. So we're down to Silverdale, Panjo, and David.
Okay. Harry, you want to go? I think you got. Are you there, Harry?
I am, David.
Okay.
I just gave my answer.
Okay. Nice.
Good. Good one. There's another one that's just come.
Okay.
Aspofar says, the way that EJ is, or my experience of it on occasion, feeling or seeming to perceive something like descriptions of the clear light in reading number 4.
Nice.
Okay. Over again.
For myself, of course, a number of years ago, I recognized that I breathe unconsciously, that is, automatically, mechanically, without thought, whatever. And in the course of my study of these ideas, it gradually became apparent to me that air, the air that we breathe, it can serve as a nutritive element in our sensing of our presence. So one of the exercises I engage in order not to be ordinary, is to increasingly sensitize myself to be aware that every breath I'm taking reverberates the essential self in a way that accentuates its presence, my presence within myself. So for me, a not ordinary effort would be to be aware of my breathing. And that I like what Pauline said, you know, I wish to invoke the presence of my presence into the presence. Well, I tie that kind of a mantra together with just being aware of my breathing and not just doing it automatically, as all of us have a tendency to do. How's that for an answer?
Very nice. Thank you. I'm going to give two examples. One is an observation I had of another and something that occurred with me. So when I first got here early on, for some reason, I was thrown into the effort of helping Blair, who was in transit. He was quite ill from cancer at the time, and he had chosen to no longer take chemotherapy or radiation. And so he was just in the process of turning terminus, you know, so it was a whole thing. And we decided to create, I think it was a 24-hour vigil for him, and a couple of us were handling the scheduling of all of that. And Robert and I were kind of point people on the physical maintenance of that effort. And so we were there every day, two or three times a day. We would provide rides for people, the vigil holders. And after a week or two of this, I noticed an exceptional difference in one of the individuals that was providing vigil. That was Adelheid. Now, Adelheid was an extraordinary individual. I don't know.
In every way.
Several of us here knew her, and many of us did not. But she was, I would have to describe her as a dowdy, more than middle-aged German force of nature.
Frau.
Absolutely. But when she was in that space, she was the one that was able to not impose herself onto anything that was going on. It was a thing of beauty to watch. There was a purity of her not injecting her personality, but just serving the space with a cleanliness that was quite something. The second example was when we were starting many years ago, we were starting to learn, EJ was presenting us with the ecstatic dance efforts. And we were at those studios over there in Wildwood.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that, I think?
Yeah.
And we'd go over there. It was a dance studio. It had mirrors and all this stuff. And so a few times we would, the way you'd get us, there'd be music, some of the music, his music, recorded music, and we'd form a circle. And the effort was to, so everybody be dancing on the edge of the circle, trying to get into this ecstatic dance thing, which is, had to do with moving to the music. So we're getting this started, everybody's kind of getting ready, and he walks by me and he says, well, why don't you get us started? And so that means that the first thing is, goes into the center of the circle, and the group is dancing around you, and you're dancing. And then you call somebody up, and you dance with that person, and then you retreat, and another person comes. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Yeah. So I was in the middle of the circle, and I enjoyed this effort a great deal, so I was very comfortable at that time. And I called Coyote up.
Mm-hmm.
So he came up, and who knows what's going to happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he and I started, something happened, where we caught exactly how to move together.
Mm-hmm.
And we started moving very similar to some of the Afghani rhythmics,
mm-hmm.
just naturally. But I would say instead of Afghani rhythmics, it was Toltecian rhythmics, and you're moving to the music in that manner, and then a sound came out. And it was very interesting. And so we let ourselves be intrigued with the energy of the space, and that's how it proceeded. Okay? Now, let's pause for a second. What did you think about this as an exercise? What was important about it? How did it go for you? What was it? What was the exercise? Go ahead, Dan.
Well, in my case, I could not come up with something not ordinary using imagination. It had to be something from experience.
Okay, good.
Also, I'd like to know if we should get input from Penny.
Only if she would like to, or we can just, let's just continue with what we're doing.
Okay.
You're okay. Yeah. What else? What did you notice about the exercise?
I don't know that there's much about the exercise that I was observing, but I did observe that waiting for the responses from the rest of the members of the group put me at the point of looking at when we spend time and we're, quote, not doing something, and we're in the thing called waiting, and if we're actively waiting, it's a very full moment, and when we're impatiently waiting for something, the next thing to happen or the person to respond, then I lose the fullness of it. So it was like to continue to keep applying the focus of the group on the group responses was of great value to me. I appreciated that people participated. Whatever their response was of not really important.
Correct.
But the participation part and also the waiting part, I really actually liked that because it gave me the feeling of the connectivity that we have in spite of, or with lack of being in the same space, we get to work with this other element of time and delay and waiting and patience, and I think that's valuable.
If it had been a slightly different format, or if I had more courage, we would have waited as long as it would take
for the response,
without hesitation,
without judgment, without prompting,
any expectations. There's something that Pat said, implied in what Pat said, that was demonstrated by the group, which is the tension, the so-called tension. Dan called, first of all, waiting for Dan to call on you. And, you know, it's like, how brutal is that? Right? And this, so there's like, boy, is my answer going to be any good? Is it going to be right, wrong? And so all of that is part of the process.
Yeah.
And part of the joy that comes working in a group together. Dan.
I thought it was really important that no comment or judgment was made on whoever said what. That it provided a certain substance, actually.
That substance. Keep talking. Very important.
I'm sorry, I can't put a name to it.
I would say, David, that this performing this exercise is a form of the invocation of presence. You know, that we were, you know, that having that pause and trying to achieve what's asked for in this exercise was a calling up of essence, of the essential.
Vidara says, I seem to be in circular logic loop to define what I cannot define unless I get, I think it's wisdom, non-ordinary.
Thank
you.
That comment comes from a non-ordinary place.
Yes.
Okay. Very good, Madeira.
During the exercise, I realized in a moment, kind of for what Patty was saying, I was feeling all excited suddenly, and I wanting to say my thing or waiting for the others to actually come with the answers. And then for a moment I stopped. I could just continue doing that and allowing that program in a way to run over me and just feeling more and more the exaltation and thinking that all the sensations that are in my body at the moment are real and identifying with those. And then I would have felt very stressed and it would have continued growing and growing and being extremely frustrating. However, there was a moment where that I remembered, like, wait a minute, this is actually really good of what we are just talking.
That's
so
what we're talking about.
I do the invocation and I start feeling, getting into the actuality of the situation more than driving by my sensations or my thoughts. And that's the power of that experience to me. It was that the exercise itself of being in a group was actually creating the maybe a necessity for extraordinary efforts to appear.
Nicely put. Very nicely put. And we'll get into the concept of the necessity in future times. Very important. Very, very great answer.
There, I want to clarify her last sentence. It was, I seem to be in circular logic loop to define what I can't define unless I get some non-ordinary help.
Yes. That came across well.
Very, very much. That was implicit in what the previous one was, too.
Yes.
And so we have to watch what is the circumstance in which non-ordinary help presents itself. And we've had a couple of examples of that in this very evening. Okay? We're over time, and I like to be...
Thank you, David.
I like to be cognizant of that for...
One way of putting it.
I'm done with time. That's
enough. Thank you.
And we'll take it up. We're going to continue on this, because then we're going to open the door to what EJ talks about next in this chapter, which will surprise us, because he's going to talk about the fallen angels.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So we're going to see how that plays into this mechanism that we just worked with.
So I would recommend, especially for folks that don't have a copy of the text with them, we're being pretty careful now that we read everything in the live Wednesday night meeting. So if you don't have a copy of the book, you can just go back to the archived versions and you can hear the text being read, and then you can readdress some of the assignments that we've had through the weeks, just as a way of linking these together more strongly. When you have this book in front of you, that actually is one of the threads. But if you don't have the book in front of you, you can have the equivalent by listening to or watching the archive version again. And, we'll make an effort to get copies to people who but we can, so that people have this to work with.
Art of NGF says, makes possible for a transition from what do I get to a permanent celebration of what is.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming tonight, and we'll look forward to seeing you next week at 7 o'clock. Good night.
Thank you, everyone.
Good night.
Thanks for coming.
Hey, good night, Harry. Good night, Silverdale.
Good night.